Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We're talking today with Angie Berry about the recent accreditation of the Gadsden Arts Center, along with the very celebrated Susan Cerulean, one of the authors who will be presented at the upcoming Word of South Festival, and Miriam Dady. Speaking of festivals, we'll have guests from Southern Shakespeare Festival, so stay with me. It's all coming up.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
I take care of the whole person, interweaved throughout our office visits, if we're talking about a general medical office visit.
Right.
I'm counseling patients on how to structure their life.
Dr. Mignon talking about helping you maintain your health.
If you're overdoing things and patients walk in and say, oh my gosh, I feel so stressed out, or even young people, a 16-year-old could feel stressed out. And what does that really mean? I mean, people throw that term around, but I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't have any time for myself. I'm not sleeping well. I'm exhausted when I wake up in the morning. Well, what are we going to do? So to help people adjust their mind or their thinking or their perception and their plan to change that.
Your family, your health, your doctor. Dr. Mignon with Health and Wellness Centers of North Florida. Call or click 850-656-2006 or TallahasseeHealthandWellness.com. So here we are, and enjoying the morning. I hope you are as well. It's been remarkable to see all that's coming upon us. Here we are on the day of springtime Tallahassee going on in downtown Tally. This annual event that for its many years, dating back from the 60s, has been the manner in which locals have wanted to celebrate the things that make Tallahassee very special, largely focused on our history, the various periods of time that mark Florida's emergence into the modern world, and particularly Tallahassee. And as that is recognized, going down Monroe Street in their various ways, these crews, as they're called, bring to us those periods of history. From the early settler days, the colonial days, through French and Spanish and territorial and on into statehood, and everybody from, I suppose, the Seminoles to Andrew Jackson and beyond. And so as a manner of celebration over the many years that it's been around, Springtime Tallahassee, this private club that has organized itself around such things, has done a fairly proficient job, actually, in creating this festival. All kinds of vendors and other associations participate, and the Grand Parade, of course. And they've expanded a little bit. The last night was their, they had a concert going on there. So that was part of the whole festivity. I believe the Seafood Festival is kind of tailored to fit into what they do. Lots of stuff going on there. Springtime Tallahassee, as we speak. What's remarkable in the last, I would say, 5, 6, 7 years has been this emergence of the new, the updated view of Tallahassee. And with that come other festivals. At this time of year in April, man, we're bristling with festivals. It's like, why is that? I mean, maybe because we're at a point in our calendar where we don't have to freeze to death and it's not so hot and humid that we're out there passing out from heat and humidity. So April becomes the moment when all of these festivals come upon us, and those more recent arrivals, of course, include Tallahassee Music Week, which is actually beginning today. So you go Tallahassee Music Week through the week, all the way up till next weekend, so the 2nd through the 10th. And what happens there? Well, with Tallahassee Music Week, you're getting a full presentation of more than 120 musical performances throughout the week at various locations around town. some rather atypical of what we might consider a music venue. So they'll be showing up at, you know, ice cream shops, and they'll be at a grocery store or various places that you might otherwise not expect to see music performed. But there they will be, along with some scheduled events, particularly that you want to check out. You can go online, tlhmusicweek.com, okay? And you're going to get the whole schedule there. So you got the Music Week, and then comes at the end of that week, Word of South, which started last year, its maiden voyage, this being the second annual Word of South Festival of Music and Literature. And for our part, we have with us today one of those participants, this lovely person, Susan Cerulean, who will share with us some of her work as an author, a local author that has been celebrated nationally, well-published, and a great person, by the way, very conscientious about how we are as a community and how we are as a region. I think you'll enjoy getting to know her a little bit. So she's going to be with us in the first hour of the show here coming up, so you want to make sure you stay tuned for that. At the same time, we're impressed with the accomplishments of our sister to the west. The Gadsden Arts Center has achieved accreditation with the American Alliance of Museums. Not an easy thing to do, and we're going to find out from Angie Berry, the curator over there, just exactly what that entailed in order to receive such a nod. Yeah, they got to have their act together, we'll say. So she's going to be with us in the second hour of the show. You want to make sure you stay tuned for Angie Berry, the Gadsden Arts Center curator, and what a fantastic contribution they are making, not only to Gadsden County, but to the rest of the region, not the least of which are the works of Dean Mitchell, a celebrated artist who is a native of Quincy, and who annually makes his trek back home and brings with him these marvelous works. And they've been on display for us over there, the Gadsden Arts Center. And today is the last day of the show. So I encourage you, if you're in the car now listening to me talk at you, make sure that you finish whatever other morning tasks you might have. Maybe you're watching the springtime parade. You need to hightail it over there to Gadsden Arts Center and take in the work of Dean Mitchell. Fantastic. Well, that's kind of what's going on. And then I've got the very lovely Miriam Dady standing by. She's got guests with her who are going to talk with us about Southern Shakespeare Festival. Yeah, this festival movement goes on and on and on. And they're scheduled for the 15th and 16th. That's a Friday, Saturday, the Southern Shakespeare Festival. And they'll be at the Capital City Amphitheater. So we're going to learn about that. Goes basically Friday night, 5:30 through the evening, and then again on Saturday. And then on Sunday as well. So they actually have 3 days. My bad. Okay, well, let's leave this to people who really know what they're talking about. Miriam Dady will bring us all in touch with the Southern Shakespeare Company and their upcoming festival. One of the many, and the beat goes on. To the east of us, we have a Southern Rising Music Festival happening out there in Monticello. Well, that happens that's on the weekend of the 9th. And guess what? We will be out there broadcasting. Are we going to be live? No, we're going to record the show for you, and we'll make that available to you. Southern Rising Music Festival is happening in Monticello at the Monticello Opera House on the 9th. Wow. So if you didn't think there's some very cool people doing very cool things, well, you just need to look around and find out you've got all these festivals coming at you. And I want to give a shout out to one of our advertisers, Seminole Montessori, here in Tallahassee. The Seminole Montessori School is known among many for their fine contribution to the education of young folks. Well, they've got an open house coming up on Saturday the 9th, and that's from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. So if you've always wondered, what is Montessori all about, the Montessori method in education, working with young children, this is your opportunity to learn about Seminole Montessori. Again, that's on the 9th from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Folks, I'm telling you, we've got a great show lined up for you, and you are going to want to make sure and stay with me. If you've missed any of our episodes, you know that you can always go to our website, TallahasseeTalks.com. We have everything archived. Or, if you'd like, or in addition, you can download the podcast and use your Podcast Addict or whatever podcast app you're using on your phone. It's a great way to keep in touch with all the things that Tallahassee is talking about this week. That's what we're about. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Truck and car concepts. We're your one-stop shop for tricking out and truck. Truck and car concepts. People with their cars, we're number one by far. Bed liners, bed caps, toys to throw your money at. Car stereos, car alarms, things for all you soccer moms. Detail and diamond plate, parts to fix your tailgate. Truck and car concepts. We're your one-stop shop for tricking out your truck. Truck and car concepts. People with their cars, we're number one by far. Exterior accessories, gift kit for your mud needs. Mud tires, nice wheel, everyone will get a deal. Window tinting, that's a must. Come on out and visit us. Truck and car concepts. We're your one-stop shop, we always aim to please. Truck and car concepts. Everything is here from A to Z.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for this week's Business Spotlight with Miriam Dady, brought to you by pushtheenvelope.biz.
I'm Miriam Dady. Welcome to Tallahassee Business Spotlight. I am here with, once again, Business Spotlight taking the artistic curveball at all of you. Lanny Thomas is the director of Southern Shakespeare Festival. Lanny, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And one of the stars of our upcoming production is Melanie Mays. Thank you, Melanie, for being here. Well,
thank you for having us here.
I love, love, love the theater, and I want to take every opportunity I can to give you guys a megaphone into Tallahassee. So, Lanny, tell us what's coming up.
Well, the Southern Shakespeare is coming back for its second year now, and we're going to be at Cascades Park on April 15, 16, and 17. The show on Friday and Saturday nights will begin at 8 o'clock. We're doing something a little different on Sunday because we're going to have a 5 o'clock matinee, so that's more children and older people who don't want to stay up late on Sunday night can see the production. We will actually be opening the park at 5:30 on Friday and Saturday night evenings for a pre-show, which has a lot of different things that will go on with it. We're going to have a sonnet man who is a guy out of New York City who sets Shakespeare sonnets to hip-hop. And it is, you won't believe it.
I love
Miriam,
it.
I'm telling you, it's amazing what he does. And then on Sunday, we will also be having our junior company, the Bardlings, are going to be doing a scaled-down version of The Tempest. So nice. We have the kids doing that. So there's going to be lots of activities and lots of food. And Grasslands Brewery is going to be actually creating a special brew, a Shakespeare.
Enough said.
Shakespeare. Get it?
Enough said. I'm there. I am bellying up with my pint for the Peanut Gallery. Yeah. And it's the Comedy of Errors.
It's the Comedy of Errors.
Now, fun show.
It's one of Shakespeare's early shows. And I sort of been telling people, it's not necessarily his deepest work. And in fact, it was Shakespeare, because it's early in his career, it's Shakespeare writing sitcom.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
What we did last year with Midsummer Night's Dream was to alter it a bit. And this year we're going to take Comedy of Errors and set it in a 50s carnival in the Midwest. So all of the characters are, not only are they playing, they're going to speak the words that Shakespeare wrote, but they're going to put that twist on it where they are part of, you know, there's a bearded lady, there's a sword swallower, there's magicians, there's all sorts of stuff like that. So there'll be another level of hopefully accessibility that people will understand exactly what's going on. It's a story about two sets of twins, and it requires that there be a lot of door slamming, a lot of mistaken identities and those kinds of things. And Melanie is going to be playing Adriana, and she is the wife of one of the twins.
Right. Dangerous.
So. Can't tell them apart. It's frightening. Yeah.
That is neat. And now the audience is going to be seated, or they can bring their picnic blankets and frisbees. Is that kind of the idea?
Right. There's 1,500 seats there mm-hmm. that are fixed seats, so people
right.
can sit in the fixed seats. Or there's room for 1,500 people up on the grassy area around.
Nice.
So it can be, it could be either way, whichever you want. If the family wants to come and spread a blanket out, and it's perfectly fine to do that.
Exactly.
Wonderful, actually.
And they get to enjoy Shakespeare and the stars and the trains.
Yeah, to trains.
Choo-choo.
It's such a wonderful thing. Last year, we actually had a train song, because you can't hear anything when the train goes by and when its whistle is going on. So we actually broke the action and started singing a song which we made up the words for, but it was to the tune of "Hello, I Love You, Won't You Call Me, Won't You Tell Me Your Name," the old door song, because we had said it in the 60s. This year we're going to do something different, but you'll have to come and see to find out what it is.
Oh, I think
but
that's wonderful.
It will be audience participation in that regard. It could be, anyway.
You know, so many people are that don't expose themselves or their children to theater don't understand that it's a relationship between the audience and the actors. Mm-hmm. And when you have live theater like that and things are really happening and encounters with birds flying through or trains passing by, makes everyone a part mm-hmm. of it. I just think everyone should go. Everyone should attend. When are the dates?
April 15, Friday, April 15, Saturday, April 16. The pre-festival starts at 5:30, and the show goes on at 8:00, and then on Sunday it starts at 2:30, and the show goes on at 5:00.
Fantastic.
On Sunday the 17th.
I wish you could play for weeks and weeks, huh?
Would be nice, except there's a little thing called rain. I don't know if you ever heard this thing about April showers.
That doesn't bother carnival workers.
That's right.
Out of here.
We'll do it whatever.
Sure. Exactly. If they paid their money, don't let them go. There's no rain call. Melanie,
yes.
Tell me about the show. Have you done this show before?
I never have. No, this is a first for me. Yeah. But it'll, you know, it's just different. It's different because I can't rely on a song to carry me through. I have to just be a character.
Right.
And have to be Adriana.
Good. Well, I'll memorize those so I can be your understudy.
And you won't know whether I've forgotten or if that's really my line.
Well, it is such a fun show, and I want everybody in Tallahassee to come and enjoy Cascade Park, to come and enjoy all the talented people that we have, and I want there to be a huge turnout. How can people find out more?
Well, I just wanted to reiterate that mm-hmm. the show is free. It's for the community, so there's no charge
they
to come see.
They can't throw money on stage?
Sure they can.
I'm going to be wearing a G-string, so they can put it in my...
Oh,
no.
Oh, my.
No. Oh, boy.
No, sorry. We obviously, because it's a free thing that we do for the community, we need lots of donations. And there are ways to become a member, which gives you some support, gives us some support from you if you want to do that. You can go to our website, which is www.southernshakes.org.
Yes.
And you can see how to, what the show, a little bit more about the show, about our membership program, and all of the other stuff that's going to be there. I have to tell you, the set is designed by Ruben Arana, who is the set design teacher at FAMU. It is going to be flipping fantastic.
I can't wait.
It's an amazing set. So if you don't like the actors, you can just look at the set.
I love it. Southernshakes.org.
Right.
You can find them on Facebook.
We're also, the Southern Shakespeare Festival also has a Facebook page, and if you like that, you'll get all of the updates that we will be doing in the next 2 weeks. We're going to be doing a lot, obviously, as we get closer and closer. So
wonderful.
Climb aboard.
Oh, yeah. Everybody enjoys a good carnival.
Yes.
At least we can all come together and get a tummy ache together, for sure.
Indeed.
But thank you, Lanny. Melanie, sure. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us for Tallahassee Business Spotlight. I'm Miriam Dady.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Word of South. Music and Literature Festival is coming upon us very quickly, my friends. And as it goes, this lovely festival, along with many other fine festivals in the month of April here in Tallahassee, is contributing sizably to not only the landscape, we'll say us as a community, but is drawing attention from across the country with people bringing their various talents and gifts in music, in literature. One of Tallahassee's favorite, one of our very own, is one of those authors, Susan Cerulean. She's our guest this morning. How are you, my friend? Good to have you with us.
I am great and glad to be here.
What a pleasure. She is the author of Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change, a provocative title, I might say. So that just makes me want to just stop what we're doing right now and start reading this book. But we don't want to do that at the moment because we're getting to know this marvelous person. Sue, you have been writing for a while. You're pretty well published. Tell us about your beginnings as an author.
I actually began as a young girl as an editor.
Ah.
I edited my sixth grade newsletter. And I edited lots of different things all my life until I felt like I wanted to explore my own voice and what my own passions are, just as you do. And so I would say that in this kind of writing that I'm doing now, it's probably been about 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And in that time, not only this, now this is your latest book, Coming to Pass, but then you have this other one that you're responsible for, Between Two Rivers. But that's an anthology, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that was edited by you and Janice
Ray
and Laura Newton. Just a word about that, Between Two Rivers. Again, a provocative title. Stories from the Red Hills to the Gulf.
I think that lots of your audience members probably know this book because it got a lot of play in our area, but I'm finding that it continues to be of interest to new people in Tallahassee because it brings together voices, lots of voices, with different points of view and rooted in the place in a different kinds of ways.
Remarkable.
So you might go from the Rudlows at the coast to June Bailey White in Thomasville, and we're all linked in this bioregion, and an anthology is just a great way to bring together lots of voices.
Marvelous. In fact, I would underscore your assertion. We are a diverse people, are we not?
We are.
Many times I think that out from the outside looking in, people might want to characterize North Florida with a broad brush and that sort of In the sense that they are insensitive to or just unaware of the diversity that we benefit from, I think. We expect such things in larger metropolitan areas, right? Where you have people from various backgrounds and cultures and, as you say, points of view. Tallahassee benefits, I think, because we have attracted to us then people from various parts of the world who have made this their home. And that's increasing remarkably, and Word of South, I think, is helping to celebrate that as well. Your involvement there, this is your second year. Of course, it's the second year of the festival, but you were involved last year as well, and I know you did some work there with Velma Fry accompanying you. Tell us about what happened last year, if you will.
That festival appearance was a life highlight for me. It really was, because I've been singing in circles with Velma Fry as a student for 20 years.
Wow.
And I love her music, and I don't know how far you go back in this town, but for those of us who've been here a long time, her Friday afternoon evening gigs at the Alley were what we all waited for at the end of the week.
Yeah.
Now she's singing and composing more out of her home.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that her music would complement my writing because we've worked together as friends and colleagues just singing for so long. So what we did was we put together a medley where I would read a little bit, she would sing, maybe a cappello, and then I would read a little bit out of my book, and she would do the thumb piano and sing, and then she would do something with drums. And music, even more than words, I think, music makes a heart connection, and you know, so that's how you get people to cry. That's how you get people to be drawn in to what they love about a place, and that was our goal.
It's often quoted that, you know, people will forget what we say, but they will always remember how we made them feel.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think you're right. I think that when it comes to those connecting pieces between us, those parts of ourselves, music is that conduit, right?
Yeah, that bridge that we were talking about. But I think that that's what Mark Muschin and Mandy Stringer were after last year. And there weren't a whole lot of those sort of duo acts. But if you look at this year's schedule, they've got some fabulous things coming up. Pierce Pettis is going to be singing with Janice Owens reading, and I can't wait to hear that one. There's a number of, Bob Shakokas is going to be reading with somebody that I should know. And I think they're getting more and more into blending the arts to just like open us up like a bunch of Tallahassee flowers.
Yeah. Well, in that respect, we spoke of this diversity. I noticed that too, that among the lineup of authors and musicians, the diversity is remarkable. I mean, you've got people from, I mentioned Pierce Pettis, you've got some pretty substantially recognized music groups. Dawes is going to be there. Didn't they just win? Somebody won a bunch of Grammys lately, and I don't remember exactly which one. I think they all have. But if that's the case, how do you think that impacts us as a community? When we look at ourselves, right? Our self-awareness, let's say, as a community. How is it that this festival, do you think, impacts our perception?
Well, if it's put together right, and I think it has been, it acts as a mirror. We are uplifted by all this heady art that we're able to listen to. And then we have a chance to reflect outside in that beautiful Cascades Park and think, this is the heart of who we are. And isn't this just amazing?
It is.
You know, and let me just jump in with another act that I hope people
Please
will
do.
See. The Currys. Do you know the Currys, Brian?
Don't. No.
Don't miss them this year. Two brothers and a cousin from over along Port St. Joe coastline. And they do a lot, almost all original music. I heard them last year for the first time there. They are really grown from this ground, and you'll want to hear them.
As an author, and let's talk a little bit further about this, the book Coming to Pass, Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change. What is this about?
Well, this book was born out of my love for our coastal islands. And the wonderful thing about being a writer, claiming yourself as a writer, is that you get to, almost every good piece of writing allows you to begin with a question. And so my question was, how did our coast come to be? You know, these islands that we love so much, that are part of our identity in Tallahassee and Thomasville. And then my husband's an oceanographer, and I know a lot of scientists, and I grew up, I have a degree in science as well. Then I just started to go around and ask those people, so where did this sand come from? Where did this, you know, where do these beach mice come from? Where do these willets, what do they do? And as it evolved, I realized that it was a lot about my just watching, being there, being quiet, being on the edge and seeing what was happening and how people interact with what's down there. So the book began with a question 10 years ago. It took me places I never would have guessed. And I think that's always true with writing.
And a marvelous connection between our natural world and the human, right?
Yeah, pretty much everything I do is that way.
Folks, we have with us Sue Cerulean. She's one of the celebrated authors who will be at Word of South and that festival coming up here in another week, April the 8th and April 8th and through the 10th that weekend. Rain or shine, as it's being
said. We were in the downpour last year.
We will expect great clear weather for that weekend. Mm-hmm. Folks, you stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. And I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Sue Cerulean, this lovely young lady who has, for her many years, applied so many different areas of interest and talent as a scientist, as a singer, and most recently as an author, starting what you say when you were in sixth grade, editing the class newsletter or something, newspaper, right?
I think that's how a lot of us begin. We edit other people's words, we read other people's words, and if we're given the right opportunity, we can grow into our own voices. Mm. And I think that's what's happened for me.
Well, in fact, that voice is being used rather well, I would say, in this latest authoring of Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change. You and Ann Rudlow had a good relationship, did you not?
We were colleagues. Yeah, I didn't know her as well as I would have liked to have.
Yeah. Jack has been on the show several times, and of course the whole Enterprise, Gulf Specimen, Marine Lamb, and all that has been at our center of concern and interest, both for his organization, but largely for us as a community and for the natural world. And, you know, Jack is one of those folks, and maybe the person most of all, who has cautioned us and even been emphatic about what we are doing and what can not be taken for granted. We have to stop and realize there are no guarantees here, folks, if we are ignorant in our management of and our contributions to, positive or negative, that Gulf that we love so much may not be the same. So when you wrote this Coming to Pass, was that kind of in the back of your mind that you had in fact a desire to make us more aware of just exactly what we've been given?
Yes, that was exactly at the heart of my work. I think it was a combination of concern and then love. You know, you can have a pure love for your place or your child or whatever it is that you're wanting to express. And those two things go hand in hand in this planet where there's 7 billion of us and we're really, there's too many for the earth to be able to accommodate. And you see that in South Florida. But in North Florida, it hasn't happened yet. Yeah. And so these kinds of writings and the work that the Rudlows have done and this other anthology you haven't even seen yet that we wrote some years back right before the Gulf oil spill, another anthology that's cautionary but also filled with love. Young people to old people all along the Gulf Coast, writers who wanted to express what is so precious about our coast that we must not risk it. And I think that, my newest book was my opportunity to just muse my own self about the coast, about the edge that we're on as a human species. Mm-hmm. And where better to consider the edge than the edge of St. Vincent, St. George, Dog Island.
Indeed.
St. Mark's.
Indeed.
And that's where I'm writing about and coming to pass.
Indeed. And this particular book that I'm looking at, Unspoiled, the subtitle, Writers Speak of Florida's Coast, you're saying this was published prior to...
It was just absolutely...
That's eerie, isn't it?
It was staggering. We got the idea for that anthology from the writer Terry Tempest Williams, who had put together an anthology to... raise awareness of the Utah wilderness, the Red Rock wilderness, and we wanted to do the same for the Gulf. Mm. And that was published in April. I mean, within weeks. Mm. Within weeks, the oil spill happened, and we were able to spread this word widely because people were concerned.
In fact, when that happened, you must have absolutely... of being devastated to realize your worst possible fears.
It was. And like everybody else in our counties, you know, Leon, Franklin, Gulf, we watched every day for evidence of the spill on the beach.
Yeah.
My husband Jeff and I went down there, you know, often instead of doing what we normally might do to see what was happening. And we were very lucky here. But in Louisiana, it's never going to go away.
Not so much. Yeah. Well, folks, the fact is we have with us not only an able author in Sue Cerulean and a contributor to this year's Word of South Festival, we have somebody who really loves this region and seems to have a tremendous love for us as well as for the natural world. For you, that must not always... Let me put it this way. I would imagine that you find yourself in some level of discomfort most of the time because when I think of those people who are most able to contribute to the welfare of our own social world as well as to the natural world, there seems to be many occasions when they don't. They don't pull the trigger. They don't say, hey, we can do something here because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. They tend to pull back or look at their own self-interest. What are we not doing, I guess? Where else do you see us really lying there sort of ignorant or even insensitive?
Oh, where to begin? I think that one of the things that people are just coming around to now is understanding the effects of climate change and rising sea levels potentially on our islands and our coast in general. Mm. That's one area. Another is the use of fresh water. I'm a big supporter of Apalachicola Riverkeeper. Mm. And those folks work just as hard as the Rudlows to try to negotiate a way towards the proper amount of fresh water in Apalachicola Bay so we wouldn't have to grow oysters somewhere else, that the bay itself could do that if we had the right amount of fresh water.
Yeah.
I think the most interesting area to me and where I feel personally on an edge, and you might even say a mission, is regarding birds. Birds are my main passion.
Okay.
And in the process of writing, I took a lot of time to just be there and watch, just kind of hunker down in the sand and become something not to be afraid of. And in watching people and in watching birds, I realized that as a general rule, we are something to be afraid of, to be accommodated by every other species on Earth and without their permission or their choice. So I'm interested in watching what other creatures need. That's the part of diversity that most interests me, Brian. Mm. I know that I began with the diversity of human voices. What I'm interested in now is trying to uplift the voices of those creatures that can't speak, like brown pelicans, manatees, dolphins, octopus, whatever's out there. Mm. Rivers, they all have just as much of an inherent right to existence by virtue of being created on this earth as we do. Mm. That's where I think we have a big disconnect, in that conversations with people can really shed light on. And people, most people, if you approach them from a spiritual point of view, whatever your religious practice is, it's spiritual to think of, we were all created, that palm tree in that picture, that child, that swallowtail kite. What do they need as well as what do we need? That's what I'm interested in.
And there is common ground, as you say, spiritually. We have in mind that there is inherently value in all that has been created, and a creator who would consider that a good thing, a good idea.
Yeah. Not just value, Brian, but rights, a right to existence. And that's challenging sometimes.
It is challenging. Well, she is the author of Coming to Pass, Florida's Coastal Islands in a Gulf of Change, one of the celebrated authors in this upcoming Word of South Festival, which comes up here April 8th through the 10th. Susan Cerulean, our guest this morning. What a pleasure and what an honor for me to be able to say that I am her newest friend.
And you're mine.
Folks, that's what I have for you here at the moment. You stay with me. I've got ABC News coming up at the top of the hour, and we'll be back with more Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The most talked about topics in town, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are. We're back, and I'm glad that you've stayed with us in the second hour of this here fine radio show. Once again, for those of you who are new to the Tallahassee area, we'll say welcome. And if this is, in fact, your first year of spring in Tallahassee, man, it comes unglued around here with festivals happening everywhere. One of those that we are especially proud of is the Chain of Parks Art Festival. And coming up next week, we'll have with us Kelly Dozier and Kozoliski talking about Chain of Parks Art Festival. This is an annual event hosted and presented by Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts. For them, it's a fundraiser. For us, it is a fantastic demonstration to us as a community and to the world, the wonderful artwork that comes from this region, from our town, and from artists around the country who come as a juried event with great scrutiny. I mean, they are juried, and the best of the best are those that are then presenting at this festival. That's coming up on the 16th and 17th. We will be there live. We're broadcasting Saturday the 16th, so that's in 2 weeks, from Chain of Parks Art Festival. Isn't that cool? So we will be there with guests like Andrew Gillum and Rick Miner and Randy Breenan, and yes, Kelly Dozier will be with us, folks from various business groups, I should say, the Chamber of Commerce. I think we will have Sue Dick. We're trying to get her scheduled in there, and Jared Willis, who's head of the Tallahassee Downtown Business Association, or is it Downtown Tallahassee? I always get that mixed up. Regardless, you'll be able to tune in and find out more about what is turning around in this town. And there's so much going on that it's tough to keep up with it, I'll be honest with you. There's a momentum, I would say, a kind of critical mass that has come upon us. It's happening, I think, because there's this sort of collective awareness that we are more than a football team, more than a state capital, more than a couple of major educational institutions. All of those things, of course, are great, and they're contributive, and they are part of us. But now what we're recognizing and doing so more often is the other side, the rest of the story, we'll say, that among those many people who make up this town, there's a lot of very cool things going on in business, in technology, in innovations, educationally, socially. We have civic organizations and social service agencies that are contributing remarkably and doing so in a manner that is unique to their particular approach. And I think of Capital Area Youth Services, right? So these are folks that do what? They spend their days helping to reach out to especially runaway kids, but many others that find themselves in troubled situations, right? Or how about the neighborhood health clinics, now seven of them, that operate to serve exclusively low-income and homeless families. That started right here. And we are delighted to know that with Word of South and with Tallahassee Music Week and Chain of Parks Art Festival, a Southern Rising Music Festival, the Southern Shakespeare Festival, wow, it gives us pause to say there is something about this town that makes us unique, yes, makes us not just different, but has a styling. Sometimes I think of it as the sound of Tallahassee. And incidentally, what we're doing is trying to bring more and more of that music to you. We have a online radio station now, Moose Magnificat, which you can find online, moosemagnificat.com. It's locals only. It's all the local musicians we can find and present to you their music and their songs. And so there's an opportunity for us once again to get in touch with who we really are and why we think that Tallahassee is a very cool place to be. You, my friend, are part of that. You are contributing in a lot of different ways in your own capacity, and you have those activities and organizations that you participate in. I want to encourage you to do something. If you are involved in an event, if you're part of an organization, if you're familiar with somebody that you think is doing something very special, send us an email. It's very simple. You can send it to topics@tallahasseetalks.com. Do that, and we will reach out to that individual. You don't even have to do more than that. Just send us the information, an idea for a topic or a guest that you'd like us to consider, and we will follow up. We'll take care of all the rest of that. How about that for you, huh? So Tallahassee Talks now is in the business of talking with very cool people, and I've got one of those very cool people coming up shortly, Angie Berry. She is the curator for the Gaston Arts Center, and Gaston Arts Center recently received their certification. Is it? They were included for having qualified, and this is not an easy task. This is the American Alliance of Museums that scrutinizes the organization, the operation, the mission of any given museum. Well, here they are, Gaston Arts Center, having received their accreditation from this national organization. Not an easy thing to do. Angie's going to talk with us about how that came about and then talk further with us about the mission as it stands. Well, how is it that they're contributing, they're giving back, not only to those of us who enjoy the art that we see on display there at the center, but even the educational programs that they've invested in and the lives of school children they are investing in week after week after week. It represents for us the kinds of things that we get to participate in either directly or we can contribute to. And let's face it, Gaston Arts Center is a nonprofit organization. They could use our help. So don't forget that they're looking to you and I for help, that support that makes it possible for them to do what they do. So we'll have Angie Berry with us shortly. And then prior to that, I've got Vincent Hunt with the first of what we hope will be an ongoing contribution from Dear Vincent. Now, this is a guy who's been on the show several times. You know Vincent for his work in a number of different arenas. The most provocative thus far that I've seen is this creator's camp that he has masterminded. And in doing so is, again, contributing to the welfare of young people by giving them opportunities they wouldn't find otherwise in a more traditional educational setting. So this is a remarkable contribution to education of young people. And we're going to get to hear his thoughts as we bring you Vincent Hunt here coming up right after the break. In my observation, this is a man who sort of represents to me this brilliance of diversity. Okay. And by the way, when we talk about diversity, it's along a lot of different lines that Tallahassee is not simply painted with one broad brush, that we have all of these people coming from various parts of the country, various parts of the world, with a variety of backgrounds and skills and talents. And as we open our eyes and open our hands, open our minds to the inclusion of all of these people and all of their ideas, we benefit, right? So the brilliance of our diversity is our greatest hope. That's what we're about, and that's why I'm glad you're a part of it. We think Tallahassee is the opportunity that we've been looking for. It's a place where you can get started in business. You can create something very special. You can participate in something that is very special that somebody else has created, like one of these great festivals that we have coming upon us. Folks, I appreciate you staying with me. We've got more coming up right after this break, so please stay tuned. You are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Mary Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. And that's why we rely on Mary Maids right here at our studios. They are proficient, and they are reliable. And I want to tell you, when I come into the office and I find the studio fresh and clean, it's a great feeling. And the neat thing about it is they get into all the details that I probably would overlook, you know, I mean, but I want to tell you something else. As a new customer, when you sign up for their 24 weekly or biweekly cleanings, on your first cleaning, you're going to save up to $400 because they'll spend that first cleaning doing the extra, extra deep cleaning that you probably would do if you wanted to do it yourself, but you don't have to. You can call Mary Maids. It's the best thing to do. And let me tell you something. Here's another special offer. You're going to save yourself 10% on that first call just by mentioning Tallahassee Talks when you call. Would you do that for me? Call Mary Maids this week. Here's the number, 386-2205, and tell them, I heard your ad on Tallahassee Talks, and I'm ready to receive 10% discount on my service. They'll do it for you. They're right here in Tallahassee. You can go online at marymaids.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
This is Vincent Hunt. I'm the founder and CEO of Massive Corporation, and what we're responsible for is Creators Camp. And today, what I want to talk about is something that we think is really, really exciting, something that we think is going to add a lot of value to not only our community, but communities all over the country. That's the vision for it, is a program, or what we call the fourth narrative or the fourth experience narrative of Creators Camp. And if you're not familiar with Creators Camp is a year-round program. It's designed for K-12 students so they can actually touch the STEAM paradigm. You're probably more familiar with STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. But we've added that A component in the STEM paradigm is art, because we believe that art and design is just as important as we move forward into the creative economy. So again, it's a year-round program designed for kids K-12 to be exposed to the STEAM paradigm: science, technology, engineering, art, design, math. And so when you think about Creators Camp up until this point, and I know you've probably heard a little bit about Creators Camp. If you haven't, you're going to get the rundown today, and you're going to hear about something that we think is really exciting called Tribes. But Creators Camp has parts, and these parts, these design narrative parts, where you have an expedition where kids go on a 1 to 4 week experience touching different technologies, learning about those technologies. This isn't about mastery. It's all about exposure for them so they can actually learn these new technologies and get an understanding of them. So ultimately, hopefully, that they'll be sparked in their curiosity. So expeditions, it's a 4 week experience, and we have those usually in the summer months. So it's kind of like our replacement for summer camps. The second part of what we do is flights. Flights are short experiences. These experiences last anywhere between 1 to 4 days. Again, these are just designed to spark curiosity at the core level. get kids interested in different technologies. Some of the flights that we've done so far include photography, virtual reality, augmented reality, and we'll do more moving forward into 2016 and 2017. The third leg of the experience narrative is Fireside, which is a monthly program. It's a monthly speaker series designed for K-12 students and their parents. And what it does, it gives them the opportunity to come into a safe space where we can actually have conversations with people who are actually working in the fields of science, technology, engineering, art, design, and math. Our goal with Fireside, it's really unique. It's to actually mitigate the fear of parents, because sometimes parents have fear, right? If they see their kid playing video games all day, they think they're definitely going to cop out on life and be a loser, right? But that's not necessarily true. It could be a situation where that kid just has an affinity towards gaming, and gaming is a multi-billion dollar industry. So how do we harness that passion and that desire to game and put it into something that works in the marketplace? So when a parent has fear over the future of their children, sometimes that can actually, you know, dampen their ability to lead that child into purpose or lead them into, you know, their life work. And so we want to kind of mitigate that. On the other end of the spectrum is the child who's actually in this speaker series, who can actually watch and hear somebody that's in a craft that may be interesting to them, whether it be graphic design, again, game design and development, a programmer, and get an understanding of what that industry looks like at a very intimate level. So we're really excited about Fireside, super, super excited about Flight, and super uber duper, if that's even a word, right, for Expeditions. That's what Creators Camp has been up to this point. So what I want to get into right now is the fourth piece of this design narrative, and it's something that we've been thinking about a lot, and we think that it adds a lot of value, and it's called Tribes. When we first started thinking about Creators Camp Tribes, we thought about it from the context of what happens when a kid is really, really interested in, you know, if it's just computer programming. Can we put them in a group of other kids that are into programming and let them go down the path of exploring that field? I think that's cool. I think that's something that we should do. However, as we thought about Tribes even the more, we wanted to go further and deeper than that. When kids are in the Creators Camp program, we're always telling them, you know, it's never too early to, you know, venture out on your dreams. It's never too early to crack into the marketplace. It's never too early to try your ideas out. We're telling them that. But to be honest, I don't think we ever tested them in actually doing that. So Tribes is going to give us an opportunity. It's going to give us an opportunity to test young people in their space and help them fill the marketplace sooner than later. Tribes is a hybrid skills acquisition and development platform combined with the strength and abilities of an incubator, a business incubator. And if you're not familiar with what a business incubator is, It's a place that's been designed where people who have startup ideas or startup company ideas can go, and there's resources for them there, whether it be legal resources or financial resources. They can go to this place and actually start their business at a fraction of the cost. So imagine this. If you take five high school students who want to get into game design and development, get them up a space inside of an incubator where there's going to be resources. Couple that with seed investment from their parents become angel investors, and you take away the problem of time because kids are naturally still at home. The thing that founders or startup founders face is the fact that there's either a lack of capital or time. When I say time, it's a matter of, okay, I've got bills to pay. I need to make money today, right? These kids will be in this program for 1 year, 52 weeks intensive program. Well, they'll have mentors, they'll have coaches, they'll have strategists and people that can actually help them start their business from the ground up. They'll come in after school and work just as if they were working at a 9-to-5 where they're clocking in, they're coming in and they're starting a business. The very first thing that we're going to do with Creators Camp Tribes is we're going to launch a mobile game design and development company. We're going to have five young people in the lab learning about branding, learning about, you know, financial responsibilities. They're going to have an accounting coach. They're going to have a strategist. They're going to have a business plan writing coach. And these people are going to help them and work with them for the course of 1 year. At the end of the year, these kids will launch their very first mobile game into the Apple Store. This will happen in May 2017. So what is TRIBES? TRIBES is a 52-week intensive program designed for high school students that have a desire to learn about entrepreneurship, but we're going to do it in a very intimate way. We're going to put them in the marketplace. They're going to start a legitimate Florida registered business, and they're going to grow that thing from the ground up. We're excited about TRIBES. TRIBES starts in May. The application process is already in play. It's a two-stage process where the very first part is about self-awareness. They're going to be answering questions like, how do you view the world and how do you view yourself? And then after that, they're going to get together and learn about each other. And then they're going to take a test, and it's called team awareness, where they can actually take a test on, you know, what do they know about their team? We think TRIBES is going to be a big value adder to the community and other communities, and we're excited about TRIBES. And I want to thank you for taking your time to listen to me today. And we've got a lot more to come. Again, my name is Vincent Hunt with Massive Corporation, and this is all about Creators Camp. Thanks for your time.
I take care of the whole person interweaved throughout our office visits. Yeah. If we're talking about a general medical office visit,
right.
I'm counseling patients on how to structure their life.
Dr. Mignon talking about helping you maintain your health.
If you're overdoing things and patients walk in and say, oh my gosh, I feel so stressed out, or even young people, a 16-year-old could feel stressed out. And what does that really mean? I mean, people throw that term around, but I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't have any time for myself. I'm not sleeping well. I'm exhausted when I wake up in the morning. Well, what are we going to do? So to help people adjust their mind or their thinking or their perception and their plan to change that.
Your family, your health, your doctor. Dr. Mignon with Health and Wellness Centers of North Florida. Call or click 850-656-2006 or TallahasseeHealthandWellness.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We are here, you're there, and I'm glad because you know what? This part of the show you don't want to miss because we're talking about something that you don't get to hear often, at least not often enough from my point of view. We're talking about a particular neighbor to the west of us here who for many years has served us well, the Gadsden Arts Center, bringing to us celebrated artists, some who are native of Gadsden County, Quincy, and for that purpose, they have been hard at work, and they have been doing a great job. But they don't get the kind of props that often one would expect with such an able crew. And so we thought, you know what? We found out something recently. The American Alliance of Museums provided these folks accreditation. Well, I'm ignorant, okay? So don't expect much out of me. But I have very smart people around me who said, you know, that's a big deal. So you really need to talk to Angie Berry because she's the curator of the Gadsden Arts Center. Okay. So we got in touch with Angie, and here she is.
Hello.
Hi, Angie.
Hi, good morning.
And so you are the curator for the Gadsden Arts Center, mm-hmm. newly accredited by the American Alliance of Museums. Why is that a big deal?
Well, it's a big deal, one, because only a little less than 3% of museums nationwide have this accreditation, so get this award. And it's something really we've been working on since we were incorporated in 1994. When we were incorporated, our founding director, Zoe Galloway, said, this is what I want for us in the future. And it's something you really have to work on through time and policies and procedures. But basically, what it means is we're operating at the highest level of standards and procedures for a museum that in America, that we're considered working at the highest level, not only in how we handle art, but who we serve, but how we're serving our mission, how our finances are put together, and everything, you know, across the board, not just who we exhibit. And so that's, it's really been exciting because...
So they're sort of looking under your skirts,
yeah,
pardon the expression.
Absolutely.
But they're looking at not just what you do on the front end, mm-hmm. but how you operate as an organization.
Absolutely. Huh. And it was really exciting because we really started the formal process about 2 years ago, and Grace started talking to, the only other art-accredited museum in town, which is the FSU Museum. She started talking to the director over there, Alice Palladino Craig, and she kind of said, you guys are going to be fine. You'll be great. You have everything in place. And so we started working on getting all of the paperwork, and Grace worked tirelessly for months and months.
How long did this take?
It was about the process was about 2 years.
Wow.
But really, we've been putting everything in place for, you know, since the beginning, for 20.
Yeah.
And that's when we were just doing everything the way that Grace, my director, who had from a bigger museum, an accredited museum,
right. She
knew how to do everything. And so she kind of, from the museum side, so she kind of helped teach all of us, all of the staff and the board and the volunteers how to do everything in the proper way. And it's really kind of how we've always done stuff. And so when the peer reviewers come, so they send directors from a museum in North Carolina and a museum in Texas, and they came to visit us and kind of, like you said, look under our skirts.
Yeah.
They looked at the whole facility. They met individually with all the staff and the board and had interviews with us. And it was exciting because they were blown away by what we were able to accomplish in our community with the resources that we have, with our small staff.
Which I have to say are not luxurious by those standards.
No.
I mean, when we're looking at other communities around the country, even around the region, it seems to me that the Gaston Arts Center does a pretty good job with what resources you have. We hope that will continue to expand on your behalf, and that's one of the reasons why I want you here, because we think that the Gaston Arts Center not only is a marvelous contribution to us all, it is a focal point for Gaston County.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a population that needs something to celebrate, does it not?
Absolutely.
And you folks are there saying, look at the great art that we have. And it's more than just the visual art.
Right.
There's a kind of, community identification, a sort of community pride there.
Absolutely.
And tell us about this artist who is very well recognized nationally, who was from Quincy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So currently we have an exhibition that actually ends Saturday, April 2nd. So today, that's the last day of the show. And his name's Dean Mitchell, and he was raised in Quincy, Florida, very, very poor, didn't have a whole lot, was raised by his grandmother, worked in the tobacco fields, in the 60s, and in the 50s and 60s, and really was taught to appreciate what he has and to work for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And he found that he had a talent in art. There was a lot of, there were art teachers that, you know, helped support him.
Right.
But even his own family said, you're never going to make a living. You're African-American. Black people don't buy art, and they were very frank with him. But other people saw his talent, his teachers, and other people in the community who saw his talent and really supported him and bought his artwork. That helped him he got into college. But even in college, he majors in illustration and design because he was afraid.
Remarkable.
I don't know if I can do this art
thing.
But went to go work for Hallmark, and for a few years was fired from that job because he wasn't exactly doing what they wanted. And then on said, I'm going to make my living
That's
as an
fantastic.
Artist, and I'm going to do it my own way, and I'm going to do it as an American artist, not as an African-American artist, I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Since then, now exhibits in China. I mean, he was just in China. They're begging him to come back because they love his work. But he's
Remarkable.
An internationally known watercolorist, wins awards. He's won over 500 awards
Remarkable.
For his work.
Yeah.
And what's great is that he comes back and exhibits with the Gaston Art Center. He's a huge artist, and he still comes back to us as often as he can. And he'll speak to the children. He'll speak to our docents. Gives inspirational speeches, not just about his own life, but about what to do for poverty in America. And that's what our current show is about. It's called Dean Mitchell's American West. And he went to a Native American community in Arizona in 2012 and was really struck by the poverty there. It reminded him of Gadsden County. It reminded him of where he grew up, but just the physicality of the poverty there.
Mm.
And so he just started sketching and painting and do a whole series of the landscapes that he was seeing in Arizona, not in the buildings that are, you know, just falling down, and the trash and the debris and everything. There's no people in these images, because part of it, he wanted to show this could be anywhere in rural America, this poverty that we have. And this is something he's using his art. He knows he's not going to sell a lot of these. He knows that they're kind of depressing, but they're beautiful. And he wants to say, hey, everybody, take a look at this. we have problems going on in our in our country. And look at this poverty. We've got to do something about it.
You know, in those conversations we've had with artists, visual, literary, musical artists, any creative who is really passionate then, and that's an overused term, I shouldn't even use it, but we'll just say who has resolved that this is who I am, this is what I do, lives in a sort of hellish status because they're never quite happy with their last work. They're always trying to get that through their capabilities, their talents and skills and such, whatever they rely on in making those statements. Yeah. So here you have in Dean Mitchell that same sort of voice again. Here's a guy who says, I don't know that I've said it the way I wanted to say it, but I'm doing everything I can with the talents I have.
Well, and he says he's been, you know, so fortunate. He was supported by his community in Gadsden County, by the, you know, the white and the black communities.
Yeah.
And he wants to say, hey, we all need to support each other. It's his time to give back. He's been pretty successful as an artist. To make a living as a, you know, painter is very difficult.
Right.
And he's been successful. And so he says, what can I do for the next generation, for his kids? You know, he has young children, and he says, I've got to make sure that this, you know, that I'm leaving in a better place.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not the first time that we have heard that from people in Gadsden County. We have had those on our show, Curtis Richardson and others, who have had very close ties with Quincy, Gadsden County, Havana, and communities that have really been languishing in many respects because of the economics, particularly. We're going to get into talking about that a little bit. We're talking with this very lovely individual, Angie Berry, who is the curator for the Gadsden Arts Center, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me. We've got more coming up right after this.
Have you heard about TallyConnection.com? These are the folks who bring us all of the events and activities going on around town. It's a great little spot. TallyConnection.com. Go to that particular blog. You can find out everything you want to know about fundraisers and kids' activities and festivals and concerts. It's all there, brought to you by FSU Credit Union. And they make it possible for us to bring you Tallahassee Talks every week. So we like the fact that we're working together. We even have a link to their TallyConnection.com site on our website under community. So there's a good way to find them. TallyConnection.com. Visit this week. Find out more about what you love about this town. Events and activities, all to make your life a little bit better.
Hello, brothers and sisters in Radio Land. This is blues guitarist Jerry Thigpen. Don't you move, because this is Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back and we're talking with Angie Berry. She is the curator for the Gadsden Arts Center. We may recall one of her colleagues was with us some time ago, Grace Robinson, who is the executive director. Grace is away for this weekend. But I know that you work very closely with her, and then you have another staff member who is the educator. Tell us about that person.
Anissa Ford is our educator, our full-time educator, and she came to us as an intern in 2012. And we were able to hire her on part-time and then full-time. And it's been wonderful having a full-time educator, because that's really a big part of our mission, is to serve our community and the area, not just our students, not just children, but also adults. So she's really ramped up what we do with the schools. We go into the schools. We bring after-school partnerships to that. We have kids every day. We just had a huge a group of 66 kids earlier this week from pre-K through fifth grade, and that was wonderful bringing the kids in. They got to tour the exhibitions, they got to talk about the artwork, and then they also got to make art, so they all took home something. And she has been able to increase our reach, and then also ramp up our service to artists. We have master artist workshops, where we have Alester Richardson is going to be doing a workshop with people in a couple of weeks. I think it's next month, but drawing and painting, and we have a drawing and painting class every Thursday afternoon. That's anybody can come. It's $5 adults, and then it's free for high school students.
Wow. So. And here you go. rather than us thinking of you as simply an art gallery, this art center contributing to the life of this community at a granular level. You're bringing students in, grade school kids, right? And others.
Right. The key is that we're here for everyone. We don't want anyone to look at the Gadsden Arts Center and go, well, that's not for me. No, we want, and so we found that if we work with kids, especially we want to help them because they've pretty much cut all arts, all visual arts out of the elementary and middle schools. So what we can do to help supplement that, because that's part of being a human is creating art and being creative. So if we can bring in students at a very young age, they feel like it's their home. They can come to the Gadsden Arts Center. Over the summer, we had a couple of students who came to our drawing and painting class, the high schoolers, and they liked it so much that they said, what can we do for you? And so we got them, they helped us out and painted some walls, and then over the summer they just showed up and said, can we just go and paint and, you know, just hang out in your classroom during the summer because we don't have anything else to do? And we said, absolutely. You know, we want to be that safe place for kids, you know, to come in at all times and you know, be able to produce and feel safe.
And this particular show with Dean Mitchell, that ends today, you said. Okay,
yes.
So there's still time, folks. Mm-hmm. If you want to drive over to Gadsden County, go over to Quincy, get a look at the works of Dean Mitchell. How late are you open?
Till 5.
Till 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Plenty of time. It's a 30-minute drive. You're there. Now, you're located pretty close to the center of town.
Absolutely. Right in downtown Quincy, right on the Courthouse Square.
Yeah.
So can't miss us.
Yeah. There's the Courthouse Square. There's the Gadsden Arts Center. And there's the Leaf Theater. It's all right there. So go in. Is there a price of admission?
Just a dollar donation if you'd like.
But. Oh, my goodness. Folks, come on. Give them $1,000. Go in and have a great day. Find some nifty. There's some neat little restaurants and shops over there. When you look at your role as curator, we've talked about Grace's role as educator or as a executive director, and then the educative role that this center plays. As curator, how do you spend your day?
That's a good question. I do a million different things, I feel like. But I work with artists to exhibit their work with the Gadsden Arts Center in our many different galleries. And we have all levels. So from the internationally known artist, Dean Mitchell, who exhibits in our galleries, to the retirees who are working on their stuff as a hobby, and they exhibit with our Artist Guild, to the students from the FSU who are working on artwork, down to the elementary schoolers that we exhibit their artwork on display. So we try to kind of hit everybody. We have something for everyone to exhibit. Then we have a collection of artwork. It's a small but mighty collection of artwork created in the South, Southern contemporary art. Contemporary meaning it's being made today within the last, you know, 20, 30 years. But a portion of our collection is vernacular art, which you could say kind of Southern folk outsider art. And that is a collection that has traveled. Currently, it's on display down at the Lipa Ratner Museum in Tarpon Springs through May. And so I work on our exhibitions. We work very far out. So currently I'm working on exhibitions in 2017, 2018, 2019. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of work ahead of time, curating those shows, putting them together.
Fantastic.
So I also install all the install all the artwork and stuff. And
make
it
look
pretty.
The weekends you wash the windows, no doubt.
Yeah.
Folks, I'll tell you, she's wearing me out just thinking about all that she's doing here. We have the pleasure of Angie Berry being with us. She's the curator for the Gadsden County Arts Center. This effort that you're making, when you were a little kid, did you ever imagine being the curator at an art center, art museum, or whatever?
I don't know what I thought, but I always loved my art classes. I mean, looking back, I didn't know that's what I wanted to do, but looking back, my favorite classes were art and music, and that was where I felt the most comfortable and the most safe. And so it pains me to think that there are kids who don't have those classes, because those were the most important to me. That was so important to me to be able to do poster projects and things in school, and that helped me succeed because I could do those things.
Yeah.
And so to go to school, and I said, well, I've always kind of liked art. I'll do art history. And then I interned at a museum in London, and I said, oh my gosh, I want to do this. This is great. I loved working with artists and working with people being creative today. I'm personally not an artist myself, but I appreciate it, and I want to share it with everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I love working for a nonprofit. I love that our service is to, literally our mission is to improve the quality of life for everyone in the region.
And you mentioned your founder a little bit earlier in our conversation. Tell me about this individual.
Well, Zoe Galloway was our founding director, and that was she. I'll go back even further. In 1989, a local artist, Beth Appleton, and her husband said, we need to bring art to this. She's an artist herself. She was a teacher, and she said, we really need to bring art to this community, to the school children, to help increase our economy and support our local artists. We have so much talent around here. So they started an exhibition called Art in Gadsden. Okay. And the first year was 1989, and it was in storefronts. They just, you know, had it in storefronts on the Quincy Square, had it in banks, things like that. And so it became an annual event. And after several years of this, the community said, we need to be able to exhibit artwork year-round. Mm-hmm. And so thus, the Gadsden Art Center was born. In 1994, we were incorporated, and we were in a little church that was down the road. Mm-hmm. And then in 2000, a local businessman, Mark Bates, donated. He had to move his business, which was a hardware store. It had been built. It was in a building for 86 years, and the downtown, you know, Quincy. It was the heart of the community, really. Everyone went to the hardware store. And he needed to move his business, so he said, let me donate this to the Gadsden Art Center so they can have a big, you know, facility. And so they raised $1.4 million, Zoe did, and the community raised $1.4 million, vast majority of which was private funds, and renovated it into the museum space it is today. So it's great. It's a great example of taking a historic building.
Yes.
We are literally, the state of Florida has us in their manual. This is an example of how to renovate a space and make it a vibrant contribution to the community. So we're in this beautiful space, 100-year-old building, beautiful floor, heart of pine wood floors, but we're also an accredited museum space as well.
It's remarkable. So. Yeah, congratulations, by the way, for that accreditation. Sounds like it was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to bring that about. Mm-hmm. Kudos to you all.
Thank you.
And to this community, our sister to the west of us, Gadsden County, and all of the people who make Gadsden County what it is for us. It is, in my view, the real Tallahassee. You know, we are not confined to a few zip codes. We really are five counties. And at that, you can talk about how we are all interconnected. This is certainly a great way for us to connect with you, our dear friend Angie Berry, our guest this morning. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll appreciate continue it. To keep track of what you're doing over there. Again, folks, this is an opportunity. Go over and see the works of Dean Mitchell there at the Gadsden Arts Center, and say hi to Angie if she happens to be not busy at the moment, hanging up something or trying to wash those windows, after all. Folks, we are pleased to be able to bring this show to you each week as we celebrate all things Tallahassee. It's what Tallahassee is talking about this week, and that's why we do what we do. We're the production of Alcom Marketing here in Tallahassee, and our executive producer is Carl Cerny. I'll be looking for you next Saturday, so be sure to come on back here and be a part of all that we are talking about. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.